Yo, what is up, everybody? Welcome to episode 12 of Street Level Floppies. Friday night means independent comics, creator-owned comics, do-it-yourself comics, and anything else comics that we feel like talking about. On my right, I have Chris.
What up, guys? Episode 12. Excited to be here tonight. We got some great books to review, so I hope you enjoy.
All right, and to my left, we have Fred.
Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm here to educate you. Not Andrew this week.
Hey, that's my line. I edumacate. That's right. I educate, okay? I teach. Getting crap from a teacher about educating. Sheesh. And we're going to learn about some new comics this week. So on that note, first, Chris has a couple of things to share with us about one of his new projects that he's working on.
Okay. So, hey, guys. This is an open call to all artists / writers or duos and teams. If you don't know, I am an intern at Marvel Comics, and I and another intern, Abe, have decided to come together and try to put together a comic zine for the Spider-Man PS4 video game. Applications are open. If you visit my Twitter at panels_hoodies, you'll see a link to the application. Pretty much the idea for this zine is that we are looking to have a compilation of single illustrated pieces as well as 2-3 page stories chronicling the everyday lives of the characters in this video game. If this is something that you think you might be interested in, please apply. We are hoping to have the books printed and distributed by December so that we can show all the editors at Marvel, including those working in the Spider-Man office. Again, I think this is it's a great opportunity for me and Abe to get some editorial experience. And I also think it's the perfect experience for someone who is trying to get better at art and just trying to get onto the scene and make connections. So, if you got any questions, hit me up on Twitter.
Cool. I had one quick question. One thing that's been going around is Ed Breeson's been tweeting a lot about, and then Scott Snyder joined him a bit about how you don't send your script or your ideas ever in an email to these guys. Like, for legal reasons, yeah, they will not read it. Mm-hmm. They will delete it. They'll whatever. So something like this, you know, you're printing it independently. It's not a Marvel
right
thing, so that you can show to the editors and all that stuff. That's okay.
Because they won't take unsolicited, you know, like, you can't write a script and send it to Marvel and be like, hey, I want to be the next Spider-Man, you know, writer. Mm-hmm. But this is just a fan project, you know, a fan thing. There's no profit involved in this. No one's making any money off of it. This is honestly just a passion project. There are fanzines for all types of properties everywhere. We got permission to do it. No one will get into any trouble or anything like that. This is honestly just a passion project. If you love Spider-Man, or if you love the game, or if you just want to make some comics, or just, you know, if you get accepted, we have a Discord, and you can join our Discord and just talk with us, and we can just bounce ideas off each other. You don't know what other artists you might run into that you can make a connection with as well. We're just trying to have a really positive experience and build a really positive community off of this zine.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, it sounds like a great idea, a great place for young writers, young artists, people that want to break in to network and meet people and in the end, and maybe also get something for their resume. You never know. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good opportunity for, like, somebody looking to get their work looked at. I mean, how many people can say that they have Marvel editors looking at their stuff right away? Just submit your stuff, man. That's the opportunity. You gotta take those chances.
Also, on top of that, Marvel and I believe almost every other comic book company does have a talent office that you can look up online, and I believe it's perfectly okay to send them samples of your art. It's also perfectly okay to go to a comic con. Anyone in the country, 9 times out of 10, the big comic book companies do have portfolio reviews. I know it's a very old school thing, but they still do it. Probably got to wait in line, but it's a great way to meet people. Every one of these companies do have talent scouts and all of those things. So, like I said, it's never bad to try and make connections.
Yeah, you guys need to learn who the editors are. Find their their Twitter page and find out what they look like, because you know what? They're probably at the con and you're probably ignoring them. They're probably the person sitting behind Tom King or Donnie Cates eating a sandwich, and you don't even realize that that's the boss back there. Because you're so, you know, caught up in the artist and in the writer that there's somebody back there that makes a lot of big decisions. Those are the ones you want to meet. Sure. Yeah. All right. Well, that's pretty cool. So let's go ahead and get into our comics for this week. There wasn't a lot of comic book news. We looked around. There were some tiny things. Nothing that really was earth-shaking that we feel you have to know. I think going into the holidays, things get quiet. And then it'll hit things to kind of kick off the new year. Maybe in December we'll get some announcements. But boy, it was quiet. So our first comic this week is Clan Killers number 4. Like the demented stepchild of Game of Thrones, Braveheart, and Mark Millar's Kick-Ass, Clan Killers brings readers into an ancient Ireland filled with clans, mystics, warriors, and monsters of epic proportion. Finola finds herself deep behind enemy lines, while far off, Cillian is building an army to help her. Bonds are tested, and the questions of family fidelity comes to a crashing head in the fourth installment. Written by Sean Lewis, art and cover by Antonio Fuso, colorist Stefano Simeone, lettered by David Sharp, cover by Chris Burnham and Alan Pasquale, editor Mike Martz, published by Aftershock. This is Clan Killers. Fred, what were your thoughts on Clan Killers?
Well, first off, I want to start off by saying, excuse me, getting that winter voice right now. This is one of my favorite Aftershock books out right now. This one seems to be paced really well. It's kind of quick, actually, this issue. And maybe it's because I read it 3 times that it seemed to be quicker each time. But I think in this issue, I have a feeling like no one can be trusted in this book. Like, you can't trust anybody. There's plenty of dark humor in this book. I will say that the art is sometimes a little bit confusing because of the faces. I had a couple of times where I was wondering who we were talking about, but it didn't take away from the story that much because the dialogue, after I figured it out, I was like, oh, okay. Now, one of the dark humor parts that I thought was kind of hilarious was, I think, who was it? Finola loses her arm, her hand, and she's like talking. And it just keeps going, and she's kind of complaining, and they're like, oh, I don't know how you deal with it, or something like that. And the Headless Horseman's like, amateurs, when he's sitting there. I was like, oh, that's kind of funny, because his head is in his hands. But I thought that was funny. Obviously, Chris didn't. But also in this issue, we see, like, Finola is I feel like she's either being possessed or she has become Balor, which is interesting to me. I thought the other dark humor part I'll leave to Andrew. I think he found a lot of humor in it, and he mentioned it earlier today. God, so I'll pitch it to him.
Oh, you're gonna pitch it to me. I was gonna send it to Chris. Yeah, I really liked Clan Killers. You did highlight some of the things. It did sometimes get confusing with this art style. You can kind of lose it. Where you're supposed to follow the placement of the bubbles. And I have to look again, okay, which person is speaking right now? And there was kind of a death or an attack that I didn't realize who had done it until I turned the page. And maybe it was meant to be that way for me not to understand, but I didn't get it right away. I was like, oh, wait a minute. And then I had to go back and read before. So there's little minor problems, but I like it. I like Game of Thrones. So you have everybody's trying to kill everybody just to be the king. It's a grimy and nasty story in that sense that, like you said, about, you know, there's carving tattoos in his daughter. And then that old thing with the bishop. Yeah, that was that made me laugh. An ass for an ass. this bishop, it's implied that he did things to kids. And so the character was I think she was taken in by the church when she was little too, and by the bishop, so that she's exacting revenge on the bishop, and you have all these little kids she got behind his ass her. Back. Yeah, and they're all saying an ass for an ass, and they're all like, oh, I just it just really cracked me up. I mean, I really like this book. It's a lot of fun. It's a painting style similar to Coyotes, one of Sean Lewis's other books. But I don't know if this one quite hits as well as Caitlin Yarzynski's Coyotes does. That's just a personal preference.
I'd agree as far as like what you, the last thing you said about it not matching up to Coyotes, but does looking very similar. Overall, I too liked Clan Killers. There was some dark humor that I found very funny, Fred. I did find some of it funny, especially the ass for the ass thing. That was just like, oh, man. Okay. I do love the art style. I'm going to piggyback again off of something that Andrew said about the lettering and kind of the way that the panels interact with each other. Sometimes it was a little bit weird. But I personally liked it. Like, once you get like where you're supposed to go with it, I like how, like, you know, the interaction between the panels and how the lettering kind of connects it. I know it's kind of difficult to bubbles panels sometimes, and that's a very creative way to go about that. Overall, I liked it as a fantasy setting. I think that it's continuing to build upon itself, and so that you are kind of just getting the sense that this is a living world and the characters do have their own ambitions. Like you guys said, there's just tons of things going on between them. So I am looking forward to seeing, when does this conclude?
I think next issue.
Next issue?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm really, you know, it's really got me interested in seeing how this whole thing ends.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if that's the end of it all. Or that's just the end, and if it did enough, you know, made enough money and sold well enough, or if the trade sells well enough, if they'll give us a next chapter.
I really hope that they do continue, because this is like one of the stronger Aftershocks books, in my opinion. I mean, I like the world it's placed in. I like the mythology, the Irish mythology. I think that's kind of sweet. I think we need more of that. And like Chris said, the art style is good because it kind of plays to that type of book. Like if you're going to open up an old school mythology book, that's the type of art you're going to see. It's definitely confusing. I mean, I guess it's just like us trying to figure out who is who at times, which is kind of hard, but I really like Sean Lewis's dialogue. I think he's pretty witty and he's kind of sneaky with his humor at times. So I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing I would say is even the covers, it kind of doesn't tell you enough of what kind of book this is. And when you think Aftershock, you think horror right away. So some of those covers can kind of come across like the horror. Like I didn't know anything about Clan Killers till you told me about it when we first started looking at it. And I had seen the books and I thought it was about vampires. It just from the way the covers look, the girls, the daughters that are on the cover, that these are like a vampire women. It's a coven of vampires or a coven of witches or something. Aftershock horror, scary. That's where my mind went. And then you told me, you know, it was, no, this is a medieval setting. This is about, you know, old Ireland and different things like that. I was like, oh, okay, very different. So maybe part of why a lot of people don't talk about it is they don't realize what the book is about. So I hope maybe we've helped people know that it's something else and they'll give it a shot. Game of Thrones fans and stuff.
Yeah, me too, because I mean, I think if you're not reading this one, you're kind of missing out, because this is one of those sneaky books that, you know, everybody doesn't pay attention. Everybody's reading Heroes in Crisis, and they need to start checking out some of these.
I'm hoping that when the trade comes out that it does get the push, like, you know, the advertising, and, you know, maybe they can do something about the cover of the trade that gives you a better feeling of what to expect from Clan Killers.
Yeah.
But it is definitely something that if you haven't checked out, I know this is issue 4, and you're thinking and you're listening to this and you haven't checked out the other ones and you can't find them, when a trade comes out, this is one I definitely recommend you spend money on, because 4 issues in, it's been good each issue, you know?
Yeah.
It's been very consistent, and I like it. So I think you should definitely check out Clan Killers.
And you mentioned when I think we maybe did the last one, you know, they've done a good job of incorporating legitimate mythology from the area.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So if you're a fan of that historical fiction, you know, like, again, I keep going back to Game of Thrones and The Hobbits, Fred. Yes, The Hobbits. These kind of are Braveheart or things like that. It has those kind of elements. That if you're a fan of that, you'd like.
Yeah, because you get a dose of Balor, Banshees, the Headless Horseman. Chris knows the actual name.
Dullahan. Right,
Dullahan. I mean, you get all that Celtic stuff on this. You know, I enjoy this. This is a book that I always look forward to. When we come up with our list, this is one that I always mention we should take a look at before we finalize it, for sure.
Yeah.
Fred, I'll hit you first. What would you score Clan Killers?
I think this issue is a 4 for me, but I think the next issue has a lot of chance to be a lot higher because there's going to be a lot to be tied up next issue, and I look forward to it.
Chris, what about you?
I echo that 4. I'm really looking forward to issue 5 because I want to know who comes out on top. You know, I can't stand the father. You know, I want to see him get his, you know, come up, and I want to see what happens with that, and we'll see what happens. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give it a 4 too. I did get confused a little bit, but as you guys talked to me, I'm realizing, yeah, maybe I didn't get to it further. And I tried to read it both ways. First, I read it in the PDF, and I told Fred, I was like, oh, it's bugging me. I'm waiting for my physical copy. But I got my physical copy, and I still had a couple of little issues, but it read much better
than
the actual comic. But yeah, 4 sounds good. All right, the next one, Shanghai Red number 5. The higher-ups in Portland, alerted to her bloody path of revenge, begin to tighten their net around Red, who's got one last name to cross off her list. As she struggles to decide who she really is, and the cops come down hard on her friends, she'll have to fight her way through bureaucracy, the tunnels, and her sister to get to the man who put her on the boat 3 years ago. Revenge is never simple, but Red and Jack are about to find out just how big and complicated it can get. Written by Christopher Savella. Art, cover, and colors by Joshua Hickson. Lettered by Hassan Otsman Elahu. Color flatting, Roman Stevens. Editor, Andrea Shocking. Published by Image, Shanghai Red. Okay, this was the last chapter in Shanghai Red. Now, we could end up with something later. Like I said, we talk about how sometimes it's like, okay, well, that worked, and we'll do another run in the future. But this was the ending, in essence. So I had high hopes for it because I really liked this comic. I felt the last one slipped a little, but I still really liked it. This one felt a little messy to me. It's like he had a lot still left to tell.
Yeah.
And he only had one comic. So, man, we talked about the last one moving fast. This one was moving fast. Like, it could have really benefited from one more issue, like maybe telling the story of her in the bar and how she got out of the bar. Mm. And then the ship in the ending would be another issue. But then again, it might be too long and that'd be too much exposition. But it really felt fast and it felt forced. There was a lot to tell. But it wasn't bad. I mean, like the solicit says, her realizing that what she's trying to do, she can't really do it alone. That was the message. That she can't exact this revenge without help. She needs her sister. She needs friends. She needs her crew. And in the end, it proves out that point. The ending, because they kind of tack on another ending, felt a tad bit corny, but I guess it's satisfying because, you know, comeuppance and revenge was extracted. But art was beautiful again. The dialogue was really good, actually. I just felt like the story was like, the pacing, like, vroom, we need to get this done. This is your last book. It's all here today. Hang on, and we're going to finish this today. That would be my only complaint. Chris, what'd you think?
I agree. This is a book that while I was reading it, I was like, man, I don't want to be rude. I think Chris Sabella is a great writer. He's got, like, you know, he's got Crowded, which is really good, and I think he had one of our creator spotlights before on the show too. I think, but
I'm not sure.
But this is one of those that I was like, man, I'm glad I wasn't the letterer on this one. There were times where, like, I mean, the whole panel is just letters, words, and it's like you barely see the art. And it was just so much dialogue. And this is a problem that I kind of had with the book going, because it kind of posed itself as kind of like this action, you know, book. And it even in this one, it had its action sequences where there were like two or three pages with no words and just art and crazy stuff happening. But then there's also parts where it's just like, this is too much to read. I don't see any art. Like the whole top portion of the, you know, panel is just word bubbles, you know, and it's blocking stuff out. And I was just like, man, you know, it's just, you know, it's real when you notice it. I think Fred had said something. And when we first started the show, of like, I think a letterer that he likes told them that it's, you know, it's good lettering when you don't notice it. You know what I'm saying? And I noticed it, you know, as I'm reading, I'm just like, something just seems off. And so, yeah, too much dialogue for me. I would have definitely preferred throughout the book if it was like, if it was able to balance that better. Because the thing is, Sabella has written some great action sequences throughout this arc. Like, I remember a few issues ago, like, running in the basement and running. Like, you know, the fights and stuff like that were really cool. And this one, some really cool stuff. Like, and, yeah, that's really unfortunate. As far as the ending, because, like you said, this is the end, I thought it was a little bit cheesy as well. I like my revenge stories very tragic, where, like, you know, you get the satisfaction of revenge, but it comes at a price, you know? Yeah. And like a real price. Like, you know, I think Kill Bill did that perfectly, which is a movie that I have compared this book to every time I think we reviewed it. But
yeah, I'm basically where you guys are at. I wanted another issue. I felt like it was kind of pushed along. Because, you know, like the beginning, what was it? What issue is this for?
This is issue 5.
5? This is 5? Okay, like, the first 4 issues was, like, total vengeance and, like, rage and stuff. Okay, I felt like this issue was, like, more about the heart and not the vengeance. Like, we start to see Molly's heart, Jack, whoever you want to call her in this issue. We start to see that because she basically said that Molly died on the ocean, and she took another the persona of Jack. I thought that was kind of huge, but like, I think you could have done that in another issue and just like, knock off Bunko Kelly or whatever his name is. And in like the next issue, like I felt like that could have been done. Because I did feel like it was too compact, kind of like the 14 years later thing that I was like, oh, really? That's where we're going with this. So I was like, oh, okay. Because I was so invested in the prior books that I was kind of disappointed, but I still think it was like a well job writing. I just wish that there was an extra issue there, but yeah, that's all I have for this book, really.
Yeah, and I think that's it. Maybe that's why our disappointment is a little high, is we are invested in this book. We've read it since the beginning. We really liked it the first 3, I would say, you know, and it's been 4 and 5 that kind of like, uh-oh, you know, you saw little signs in 4, and then 5 really, you know, just kind of missed the mark in places. But it is what it is. You know, you got to finish a comic book, and that's how it had to be done. So, Fred, if you were going to give a score for Shanghai Red?
I'll give it, even though I'm disappointed with this issue, I still like the overall story arc, and I'll give it a 3.5. I think that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, I'll do the same, and I'll grade it on a scale, you know, because it's coming to an end, so I'll grade the whole thing. And I give it 3.5. You know, it wasn't the most satisfying end, but like, if you can catch this book in a trade, if you don't, you know, go ahead and do it. It was good.
Yeah, I'm gonna go as low as a 3. I just, like I said, maybe it's my disappointment. Maybe I read this again in a few weeks where my expectations aren't so high, and I see it as a 3.5. But right now, it feels like a 3. I wanted more from it, and it was all over the place. It finished. It gave me an ending. I'm just not sure it was done. It wasn't crafted as well as I would like. Let's move on to the next one. Bone Parish number 4. Following a devastating loss at the hands of the cartel, the Winters family is in turmoil. To defeat their foes, they might have to break the cardinal rule of dealing. Never get high on your own supply. Written by Cullen Bunn. Illustrated by Jonas Scarfe. Colorist Alex Golomares, lettered by Ed Dukeshire, cover Lee Garbett, variant cover Tyler Crook, editor Eric Harburn, published by Boom. This is Bone Parish. Chris, Bone Parish.
So, like, every time I think we review Bone Parish, I, like, rave about it. And this is not any different. I wasn't exact. I know the last issue, it had, like, introduced a lot of different stuff. And there were a lot of things. But this issue tied all those things up so perfectly. It answered every question I had. And then, like, introduced brand new questions that I'm just like, wait, what? So, like... I love this the whole way through. You know, Mama's not playing. You know, this family had their back against the wall, and I wasn't quite sure. Like, it kind of felt like one of those stories, like, oh, we're seeing the end of this empire. But really, it seems like now this is the beginning of something, you know, stronger. Mm-hmm. So, like, man, this book has its moments. Especially the end, like the cliffhanger that it like leads you off, that it shows you, and you see the ashes of those three people, especially the one person who I was not expecting that they would do that with, you know?
Yeah.
And you guys know who I'm talking about, and I wonder what role does he have to play going forward? You know, we also get, I feel like the mom is really, highlighted in this book in a way that you kind of see her a little bit stronger, you know, like in the first issue, she is, you know, looking to the husband for advice. And then we find out the twist about him. And then like in the second issue, she's kind of at the whim of, you know, the New York mobster and stuff like that. Yeah. And she hooks up with them and all of those things. But now she's in charge, you know what I'm saying? And she's not, you know, the older son, there's no power struggle. He knows, you know, she's in charge, and she's doing what she's got to do. And I loved it. The interrogation scene was crazy. That whole book was just like, whoa. And every time I can't think that, you know, Cullen Bunn is going to like take it to another level, he does. And I'm always pleasantly surprised when I'm picking up a new issue of Bone Parish. Yeah.
I think like this issue was extremely well done. I like the tension and the action there is in almost every issue. Like Chris said, he kind of mentioned like backed into a corner. I like how the Winters family reacted when they were backed into a corner. They're showing like they're not playing. Like, I don't care who you are and who's your boss, but we're the Winters family. Dude, this issue is amazing. It might be like one of the top two books this week that we review. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, echo a lot of this. This book has been well done every issue. It's obvious that whatever story he came up with this, he has this one tight. You know, and it opens up with the cartel guy on top of the world, you know. And then through this comic, you see the fall, you know, as the Winters, like you say, gather themselves and take care of business. And that was really cool. It was an emotional episode. The sister trying to play strong and tough. She doesn't break down in front of anyone. She breaks down alone down in her lab. The kind of implications of the wife with the father, the patriarch of the family, that is available to us in like ghost form, I guess.
Yeah.
Is the best way to describe it if you're not reading it. That was cool. It's kind of like, okay, we're done with you. Mom, like you said, mama's taking charge and I'm going to do this my way. And she even stands up to the New York mob guy who she's kind of having a thing with. And she kind of implies to him, like, you better not be screwing me over either. Really, really solid book. The art is awesome. It's just scary enough. But this is a gangland story. This is a mob story with a weird supernatural twist is the best way for me to put it, which is so perfect for New Orleans.
And
one of the best books easily that we're reading right now.
I feel like,
was kind of hard on his other book last week, but this one I love.
Like, I feel like, like you said, it definitely still does have a horror element. Like, when they got their revenge on that guy who did the thing to the brother. Oh man, throwing that, you know, that stuff in his face and the reaction, you know, he doesn't. I was like, man, that is terrifying. The one thing that I could do a little less on is last issue. It was done really well, and this issue it wasn't. So I would if I were to like suggest something to Cullen Bunn, it would be like to maybe take it a step back. You remember last issue when the brothers like, you know, did the ash and turned into like Vietnam soldiers and was able to like take out. This one's a little bit weird with the ninjas. Like going up the wall. I was like, okay. Yeah, how you get a ninja ash? You know, like where are you finding the bodies for ninja ash? You know, like
he tried to top himself maybe from last week a little too hard.
I was like, no, this is a little like my suspension of disbelief was like it got like a little bit
you got
fuzzy.
Challenged.
Yeah, it got challenged. I was like, you know, where are you going to get this? Because as far as I know, they were digging up local bodies in New Orleans. You know, so there's probably tons of Vietnam vets, but I don't know about like ninjas climbing up the side of a wall.
Special delivery from Japan.
Yeah, from Tibet or something. I don't know. But like, you know, but besides that, like you said, it does have the horror element, and it's been so perfect. This is coming to an end too, right?
Yeah, I think so, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
I think it was like, I want to say it's 9 issues, but I'm not sure.
It's 9. Mm. We still got a good chunk left.
Yeah, then we still are good. We're barely at the halfway point then. That's awesome. Yeah, it had a Scarface feel this time too, the whole thing, because dealing with that cartel guy, he kind of had that Tony Montana thing, thinking he was invincible and he's surrounded by all his ladies, and, you know, he's just thinking he's in just they blow it in his face, and it's like, nah, throw it in his face. You're done. So that was really cool. So... scores then. Chris, what would you give Bone Parish?
Perfect 5 for me.
A nice big 5. Fred?
I'll give it a 4.5.
Same. I'll give it a 4.5 too. Not exactly perfect for me. I told Fred, I go, I couldn't even remember the ending. We checked the ending before we got online. I had to remember how it ended. Like, oh, yeah. Now, it could be because I read it first. It was the first book I read of the week, and I kind of forgot a few things, but... So I said, well, the fact that it didn't stick with me, then I have to kind of give it a knock.
But okay.
That's on me. That could be on me, too. But, yeah, what a great book. This one I do recommend. Try to find it. If it's a 9, then try to go back and get it. Maybe get it digitally. Yeah. I don't know how hard it is to get Boom books. I don't know if this is out of print already or if you can go back and get the 1s and the 2s. But, yeah, check it out. And great art. Okay, Hexwives number 1. For hundreds of years, a war has been waged between a coven of perpetually reincarnating witches and the all-male conspiracy known as the Architects. After the death of the lead architect in 2005, it seemed the witches had finally defeated their foes. Now 13 years later, waking up in a perfect cookie-cutter home, at the end of a cul-de-sac in a sunny corner of suburbia, Isadora has no recollection of her past life as the leader of a witch coven, nor her soulmate, Nadia, let alone the centuries-old war she has waged in defense of the soul of America. Written by Ben Blacker. Art by Mirica Adolfo. Colorist, Marisa Louise. Letters by Josh Reed. Covers by Joelle Jones and Jody Belairs. Variant cover by Jenny Friesen, editor Molly Mahan, assistant editor Maggie Howell, published by Vertigo, Hexwives. Okay, first of all, before I even go into the book, that lineup of artists is a murderer's row of artists. That is an incredible lineup. I mean, you got to buy the variant. You got one cover by Joelle Jones. You have another cover by Jenny Friesen. Then you have Mirka Adolfo doing the interior art, who's pretty damn amazing herself. This book, from an art standpoint, looks beautiful. And that's before I've even gotten into the story. So I'm already enamored with covers, both covers. I open it. The book looks great. Beautiful colors. So it's a great-looking book. Then the story was very interesting to me. Fred and I kind of talked about this one a lot because it's different. If you watch Mad Men, you're going to like this book. There's a lot of Mad Men. And the bad guys are Don Draper and the men in Mad Men. And the witches are the women. It also has a bit of Stepford Wives. So these women have been kind of brainwashed into believing that their life is meant to be the perfect little housewife who mixes the martini for their husband, who smokes a cigarette in secret because women don't do that. Good women don't do that. And they make sure the chicken is in the oven in time for dinner when their husband comes home from a hard day of work. And women don't ask questions about work because it's not a woman's place. So it's a way to keep these witches in check. The first half of the book is about the history of the witches. I found that really entertaining. I found the dialogue funny. There's a lot of funny exchanges between it as these guys flounder around trying to beat these witches, and these witches are basically just toying with them like cats with a mouse.
Yeah.
I really like the book. It's not perfect, and there's some things that I'm still not unsure of, but I definitely want to see more. I think it's well written, and I think it's a book that may make an impact as time goes along. Chris?
Yeah, definitely. I think this is one of those that has important themes. I really like the way that witches are being portrayed in pop culture now. They're less of like, you know, just a villain and more of like a symbol of women empowerment, I guess you could say. Like, these witches are very, very powerful. I especially enjoyed the first half of the book. Like you said, that whole, well, the chasing the witches, and like you said, they're just toying with them. They're too powerful. They're too strong, you know?
Yeah.
I am interested. I wish I'm going to go back and try to read those threads. Maybe it got lost, but the comparison to Mad Men and Don Draper is now one that immediately stood out. But now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, yeah. That show is kind of messed up, right? So, yeah, that's a great comparison. Yeah, it was a good book. And I think going down, I think going forward, like you said, it can make an impact. I think that this is one that people should definitely check out.
What's a goat knobber?
I don't know.
Do we want to know? Do we want to know? I don't know if I want to know what it is.
I was just wondering. I mean, that's one of those funny parts in the book. I think I might know what it is, but I'm not quite sure. Now, like this book, I thought like the take on the witches was a little different because what's her name? Isadora Roma. She gets more power because of the blood. Mm-hmm. I thought that was very interesting, you know, from other, like, witch stuff. I do like the art by Mirka I'm a butcher name. Mirka
Rodolfo.
Oh, man. Let me try my Italian. Yes. Yeah, I'm going to leave that alone. Yeah, it's really done well. I think it's especially, like, the kind of, like, Real Housewives stuff at the end was done well. I like how she did like the drawing for the kind of gives you like a Leave It to Beaver feel and things like that. I really enjoy it. The book, you know, we all know that I'm not a fan of like magic and stuff, but I did like this book after I read it the second time. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, there's magic. I wouldn't say it's the focus. Like you said, these witches they're empowered modern women is the best way to kind of explain the witches, I guess. You know, they're progressive feminists. They're controlling their own destiny and they are being persecuted for it because they're witches. And they are given powers to give us the mythical part of it. But they could just be women, regular women that are just being persecuted for being smart and independent and not willing to settle for the status quo. And right. For that reason, they are not liked by this group of men that are running the show. Yeah, the art is great. I am coming off of, I'm watching Sabrina right now, so I'm into this whole witches and magic stuff anyway. So it's in my wheelhouse right now.
Do you feel like they're hunting these women because they're witches, or is there something else?
I think it's more the bigger message. They don't like that these women are more powerful than them. These women could probably do what they do better. You know what I mean? They can run their businesses. They could be the head of their own households. The two main characters are gay, so they're a couple. So they don't even need men at all. So they've made the man obsolete in their relationship. And I think that's the bigger story, but told under this umbrella of, no, what we're persecuting them because of their supernatural nature. Therefore, they're even more powerful than their average woman. But I'm, you know.
This is... I was just going to say, like, this book is not short on any violence. I thought it was done, like, there's plenty of it. And it's good because the art kind of, like, makes it even sells it more. If I use a wrestling term,
There's more animal violence in this one. Why every week we get animal violence? Yeah, don't they kill the cow?
Hey, man, you know editors. Why are they letting this animal violence?
I don't know what's going on. Every week we get something with people doing something to an animal.
Hitting cows, killing dogs, I mean, all kinds. Yeah, there's been a lot of that this whole month, to be honest.
Some so about leave Halloween. The animals alone.
Yeah, must be. I'm not going to go there. It's kind of scary, Halloween, killing the animals. Yeah, I mean, overall, good book. It's Vertigo. Man, Vertigo is killing it on their return, if you ask me. They definitely are putting out some books that are making me step up and take notice. I'm really happy with that on a side note. So, Fred, score Hex Wives.
I'll give this issue a 4. I thought it was good. I'm interested what's going to happen next because, you know, the last panel kind of gets you wondering. I'm along for the ride because of that last panel.
Gotcha. And Chris?
I'd give it a 3.5. I felt like it did have suffer from some first issue blues, you know. So when I read the first half of it and then it switched like into the second half, I kind of was like, okay, you know, like it caught me a little bit off guard. I didn't like know what to get into. I thought it was gonna be like old colonial, like, you know what I'm saying, like which thing, which is fine, but. It was just a lot in one issue that I'm hoping gets fleshed out over however long this series is going to go. So definitely a 3.5, but it's good. And I hope that we get to review issue 2 on the show so we can see where it goes. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll give it a 4.2. Like I said, for the art alone, you had me with the art on this. I mean, I really am a fan of all these artists. So it just would take an average story and I probably would have given this a 3.5. But the story was really well written and I'm interested to see where it goes. And the message is very interesting. There's a lot to play with here. So yeah, can't wait to see more from Hex Wives. All right. Next book, Maneaters number 2, Blood Will Spill Day 2. Maude experiences abdominal cramping and a sudden increased appetite. Her father investigates another mauling. Written by Chelsea Kane. Pencils and inks, Kate Neminski? I may be butchering that, I'm sorry. Colorist, Rachel Rosenberg. Letters by Joe Carmanga. Cover and variant cover, both by Leah Mitarike. Additional art by Stella Greenvoss. I think the editor is Kate Lane because they did some like cutie little things at the end. They don't call themselves like editors and they don't call themselves. They like, yeah. I don't know. They played with it if you read it at the end. Published by Image. This is Maneaters. Fred, were you Maneaters?
Yes, that would be me. Okay. This book was pretty well written. I think it was witty at times with some dark humor. The art is beautifully done. Colors are bright in this book. That ad in the beginning kind of sets the tone for this book and what to expect. When we see like the actual ad that looks like something you would find in a magazine, you kind of see where we're heading in this book. We kind of see like Maude is growing up. She's maturing as a young woman. We see her experiencing some pain and dealing with some moodiness because her body is changing. I think this book is pretty. I think like the family aspect of the book, I'm on for. But like the actual murder mystery, I'm kind of like, I kind of wish that it was like interwoven a little better. Yeah. You know what I mean? I do think it's done well though. I'm just thinking maybe like the book isn't so much for me per se, but I still think it's really done well. What do you guys think?
I agree with that sentiment. It has its individual moments. Like Maude is a great character. She is very mature for her age. The way in which, you know, she interacts with her parents and stuff like that. It's a very fun family book. But it's also very zany and wacky. And because of that, You know, they do a lot of fun things with it and with the storytelling. But at the same time, when you're dealing with a mystery and people who like kind of killer mystery books, you got to kind of have things in order so people can maybe not follow along, but, you know, feel like they have a chance of figuring stuff out. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, kind of like what we talked about. What was the book last week? That's the mystery with the conspiracies and stuff. With the corgi.
Oh, Beyonders.
Beyonders. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's zany. It's wacky. But it still lets you in. And it still lets you try to figure some stuff out. This one just doesn't do that. It just jumps all over the place sometimes. And you go from here to there. But I think it succeeds in the main thing it's trying to do. And that's just to, you know, spread awareness, talk about difficult topics, and things like that. And it's obvious that's its main goal before anything. I think the storytelling and things like that is secondary to some of the symbolism and political commentary, which I'll leave up to you guys who, if you want to check it out, and you can definitely hit us up and tell us what you think. But I think the actual storytelling and things like that, it's definitely like on the back burner to what they're trying to accomplish. So I don't know.
Yeah, I could echo with some of that. I liked issue one more than I did issue two. I felt issue one did a better job of weaving all that in.
Agreed.
Where, yeah, this one, it's like it's two different stories, the front story and the back story, and the mystery does suffer. You don't feel any kind of fear from this, quote, mauling of these panther-like cats that are created from. So it just didn't, that part didn't work. And I think what she's trying to do with it, I was telling Fred, it reminds me of these, you remember those books, comic books, when they gave them out to you in high school? Mm-hmm. It might be a Spider-Man or a Batman mm-hmm. book, and it was filled with, you know, eat your vegetables and, you know, study hard and all that kind of, and then you have little, like, there's the little ads all over this things and the little side cartoons and all that. And I think that's kind of the look she's going for, which I think is very clever. So I do like that, the design of the book and the thought that's put into all this extra stuff, you know. But I feel like I wish there was more thought put into the main story.
Okay.
The first part, while entertaining, I told Fred, I made him spit his coffee. I go, that is my life. If people don't know, I'm a single dad. I've raised already three young women. I'm currently raising the fourth. And yeah, where the dad is at the beginning of this book, that's how I was with daughter number one. Very like, oh shit, I don't know what to talk to her about. She's just trying to eat and I'm making shit up like, hey, do you like Riverdale? Hey, is the Justin Bieber album out? And she's like, well, you just shut up. Leave me alone because I don't feel good today and I don't know how to help. Now I am on daughter four and I probably know too much about, a lot more about this topic than I care to admit because I've gone through this. And I can tell you, one of the most things they've enjoyed the most throughout the years is making me squirm about this topic. They specifically will talk about things and do things. Let's see how we can make dad uncomfortable. This is a blast. And so I can kind of see it. And I think the book is great for young girls because you have that page that talks about how to put a tampon. Okay.
Yeah,
that's important. You know, there's a lot of, you know, I'm a single dad. The girls are with themselves. You know, my mom would help, aunts, different things. But they're pretty much stuck here with a male. They're not going to ask me those questions. So, you know, if you had a daughter of younger age and you left that comic books lying around, they would learn something and they might be entertained by this story and relate to this girl and be like, oh, this is funny. This is hilarious.
Yeah.
So that's where I meant, kind of where I said, we maybe are not the audience. Oh, now, yeah. I think a good comic book does a good job of making everybody want to check it out. And I think issue one did a better job than issue two. I'm probably going to still read number three. I'm still buying it because I'm trying to get my daughter to read them. And yeah, I'll keep going with it. But it does, the storytelling is lacking a bit.
Yeah, I want to say, like, your point with the comic books. I think, like, when I was growing up, there was, like, a TV show, like, After School Specials, narrated by, like, O.J. Readmore or something was his name. Mm-hmm. And it does have that feel, like, this could be a show on there, so you could learn something from it with some humor. And that part is done well. I think it's a good book, the humor, but, if it's the mystery part, if we're trying to figure out who the cat is, I'm already thinking it's Maude. Yeah.
Or there isn't one.
I mean, right. Like that, to me, that right there, if that's the mystery, that's the part that I wish we had more with. Like maybe the second issue could have been more about the family aspect because this, you know, the mom was introduced in this issue and then go to the cat part.
Yeah. Then I would have and that been wasn't okay explained very well. All of a sudden, mom's sitting at the dinner table.
Yeah.
Like where there was no mom in the first issue. And it's like, wait a minute, where's the mom
right.
been?
Yeah.
So that was kind of, right. yeah, that wasn't done very well. So.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's still like done well. You know, the humor and stuff, and that's well intended. I just, you know, we're just, we'll have to see where issue three goes.
She captured the teenage girl. To me, that's yeah. teenage girl, the way she, the little girl was behaving and her experiences and everything. I think that was pretty good. So,
right. And the satire in this book is pretty yeah. good. It's done yeah. well.
I would agree.
I remember those high school books. I remember middle school books. I remember getting one with Batman. It was around wintertime in New York City. And this mom and dad, they were walking in the street at night. I kid you not. They're walking in the street at uh-huh. night. And the dad is like, oh, man, I can't wait to get home and turn the oven on so that we can be warm. And then, like, Batman, like, jumps down from the building. And he's all like, you don't turn your oven on. And the dad is like, oh, my God, I promise I'll never do that again. I swear yeah. I wish that shit was canon.
No doubt. That would be awesome. Yeah, that's totally what I'm thinking of. Those old books, just like that. That's what it feels like, that she's winking at us and she's giving us that. So from that aspect, I think I want more. I want a better story told, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't hate it, but it's maybe not for me, as I said. All right. So I'm going to hit you up first, Fred. What would you score? Man-eaters.
I would give this issue a 3.5 for this issue. I think that's a fair score.
And Chris?
I'd give it a 3.
Oh, man. I'm between that 3 and a 3.5. I think I'm going to go with a 3, too. I think it's really important to tell that story as well. I understand everything else she's doing with this book. And I think I'm glad there's a book like this exists for somebody. But I tighten up that story. And I think you get yourself up into a place where then more people will read it. So a 3. All right. The last book of the night, Ice Cream Man number 8. Emergencies all around town. Folks are in crisis. But this ambulance ain't stopping for no one, baby. Ice Cream Man continues with another dreary confection. Written by W. Maxwell Prince. Art and cover by Martin Morazzo. Colorist Chris O'Halloran. Letters by Good Old Neon. I need to find out who Good Old Neon is. Variant cover Vanessa R. Del Rey. Designed by Ashley Walker. Published by Image. This is Ice Cream Man. Chris, what'd you think of the Ice Cream Man?
I know I gave Bone Parish a 5, but even giving it a 5, it wasn't my favorite book of the week. Ice Cream Man number 8 was my favorite book of the week. And it's not just because it's horror, and I know this has, you know, been marketed as kind of this horror anthology, which it is, but it's also very telling on kind of society right now, and kind of like, you know, where we're at. This one was really deep. Like you get the scene with the two EMS, and they're taking the pills and not knowing what it's doing to them, and social media and things just happening all around them that they're, you know, really oblivious to, you know, and this is very telling, as to where society is at right now. And I won't get, you know, into an existential kind of, you know, rant right now, but I would definitely recommend that, because I it kind of connects to the other ones, but I think you could read this one alone.
Yeah, you could. I would agree.
Yeah, so I think that, like, definitely pick up Ice Cream Man number 8 and see how you feel about it. I think it's definitely worth the money, and I think everyone will probably take something different from it. Yeah, this was my favorite book.
Wow. You would have thought that Chris was like on here early when you and I talked, because he said like everything I was saying, I just come nodding my head.
eavesdropping.
Yeah, let me see what I can add to this. I felt like this, if you were to describe this book with one word, it would be chaos. I have a feeling like the Ice Cream Man has a feel kind of like Satan, like what's happening, and that you know, everything around you is like kind of like a living hell. And like Chris mentioned, the people are just so desensitized, like jaded, like they don't even notice like things happening. For instance, there's like rabbits getting run over, the clown. You know, there's, I'm not going to spoil everything. There's rednecks playing with forks. There's robbers. There's all types of things happening. No one, you know, nobody even thinks to bother. It kind of feels like, you know, we mentioned in the beginning when we did this book had a Twilight Zone feel. But to me, this issue feels like a Black Mirror episode where it takes shots at society. I will add that, like, Martin Morazzo, his art is fantastic. That I like his style, like this book and he, She Could Fly, perfect. I mean, he kind of like helps along that dialogue. Not that the dialogue needs any help whatsoever, but it, like, they work so well together. This is a complete book, in my opinion.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. This book was extremely good. I felt the last two issues of Ice Cream Man kind of were changing from what the Ice Cream Man was before the early issues, that I felt like, okay, well, now we're telling the story of who's the Ice Cream Man and who is the guy in the hat. Okay, but this issue went back to what I liked about the early issues. Like you said, you could read this by itself.
Yeah.
It was his own little story of weirdness, all this stuff going around. And we, it's like expanded from one single story, which was going on the other things, to all these multiple stories all over town as these ambulance drivers drive all over the place. And providing kind of like a dialogue as they go. And wow, this book is just so creepy and strange and thought-provoking. And yeah, and I felt just like the end of the panel when those guys say, oh yeah, we have that guy in the back.
Oh man, yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, the guy from last issue. I even felt the same way. Like, I didn't even miss the fact that they didn't give me what how the last issue
they
ended.
They stopped to eat.
Yeah, he stopped. God knows how wasted they were and how long they were driving around. And yeah, like he says, they run over a rabbit like nothing. It's always creepy when little kids are behaving in a behavior like nothing's wrong, when something's
sociopaths,
obviously wrong.
Yeah.
So there's some really shocking moments in this whole book. And man, this is a good book.
Yeah.
I mean, check. Yeah, just grab this issue and see if you like it. Then, you know, go back and you can find out who the man in the hat is, and also some of the earlier creepier stories that are, they kind of reference a few of the old books here and there. Like, I think the kids are talking about stuff they saw, like, oh, well, I saw a werewolf, or I saw, you know, they're referencing things from some earlier books. So that's in there as well. But for the most part, it's a standalone book. So you said it was your favorite.
Yeah,
I'm assuming your score.
Yeah, perfect five.
Perfect five. All right, Fred.
I'll give it a 5.2. Yeah. I mean, I'm not lacking empathy like the people in this book, so 5 is my score.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to have to give it a 5.2 because I said the same thing. Fred asked me, you know, what's your favorite book when we were talking about books? And I said, Ice Cream Man's better than Bone Parish for me. And he was like shocked. Really? And I was like, yeah, Ice Cream Man's really good this week. And Bone Parish was good, but it wasn't Ice Cream Man level. So yeah, I'd give it a 5 as well. This book is a neat book. And it's creepy, it's scary, and it's thought-provoking. Check it out, without a doubt. That's our books for this week. Let's go ahead and move into our roundtable, maybe talk about what we're reading, what we're watching, any news we might have seen about comic books that we want to share. We can hit Crisis. I think everyone's read Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone have any thoughts on that?
Man, Crisis was Crisis, man. That was damn good. The part with Barry was heart-wrenching, but the part that really got me, like really got me, was Superman at the end. Seeing the Man of Steel at Sanctuary.
Yeah.
Was like, wow. Right? And you see him while he's talking, trying to keep it together. But he just got that moment where he's doubting himself, you know, and I don't think I've ever seen Superman doubt himself a single time in a comic book. I've just never seen it. I've always known him as just the guy who's going to show up, take care of business, smile, get it done, get home, you know? And, like, to see that was just, like, I almost cried. I almost teared up because it was, like, wow, I've never seen that moment from him. You know what I'm saying? Like, it didn't take kryptonite to make him vulnerable. And it was only a couple panels. It barely lasted. Then he got his shit together and was like, I'm going back out. You know, I can't afford that, you know? This book was great. This whole thing is great. You said the artist is changing. So, Clayman has been a beast, an absolute beast on this book. So I hope that the next artist is able, I'm sure will do a great job as well. And we'll see what happens.
I still can't get over like the Superman part. So I'm kind of, I'm trying to leave it alone. Because Superman's like my favorite character, and see like somebody you kind of looked up to your whole life vulnerable, like he's a human, not an alien. It's kind of,
It's pretty deep. Wonder Woman has a confession in this, because they show these confessionals. That's been something they showed in the first one. Yeah. They're showing the best. That's probably the best part so far of the book, I think, are these confessionals. And even Wonder Woman, she's like, nah, what am I doing here? I don't have time for this. Like her denial of everything.
Yep.
That's very Wonder Woman. Like, she's not willing to admit for a second. She's almost willing to admit, like, yeah, I get scared. But then, nope, she recomposes herself, becomes Wonder Woman, the hero versus Diana, and shuts it down.
Yeah.
And then Bruce, my God, Bruce can't even talk. Like, it all hit him like a ton of bricks, like all the crazy stuff he's done. And I was like, whoa. And I've seen a couple of complaints. Like, people don't like that Harley's a little overpowered in this. Like, people say, well, how can Harley do that? Come on, people. Just suspension of belief, man. Why do you have to make everything so realistic?
They're fictional characters. If someone writes that Harley is stronger than Batman, she's stronger than Batman. You can't do nothing
by the plausible thing. She figures it out. She uses the lasso to make him tell the truth. She gets the kryptonite. She knocks him out. It's just a fast bang, bang, bang. Harley got lucky kind of thing.
She got the best of Superman too. Superman, Wonder Woman were there. It's not like only Batman were there. Relax. You get them Bat fans, man. They think like nobody can't do nothing to them. Like, they were there. Superman and Wonder Woman were there, and they lost too.
It's because people don't like Harley. And I think Harley's been done really well in this comic book. I think we've seen, to me, Harley's broken. So, and you got these scenes where she's being a nutball.
Yeah.
Like, she found out where it is, and she's there with Ivy being a nutball. And then you see this scene later where she's realizing that she may have caused Ivy's death.
Yeah.
And she's dropping that rose in the water, and she's like having this, like, I shouldn't have done it. I shouldn't have gone there. I shouldn't have, these really deep moments. And I like that. To me, that's Harley Quinn, this, like, okay, she's psychotic. There's the good side still in her. And then there's the insane part.
She starts going down the list of all the stuff she should have never did. Right. She should have never followed Mr. J. She should have never fell in love with him. She should have never did this. She should have never became Harley Quinn, pretty much.
Yeah.
Is what she's saying there.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm liking about this book. It's turning things on its head. And I can see some people are like, we don't need any more negative. The world right now is already depressing enough. But I think it's a good look at heroes. And art is influenced by what's going on in the world, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
And the world is dark, so this story is a little dark. But in the end, I think I'm hoping that it comes out in a hopeful way.
I think it will.
So, is your theory, Fred, changed on whom the killer might be based on issue 2? Because you had a theory before.
No, I'm going to still hold to it. I'm just interested to see where it goes. I'm not like the type of guy that's going to get all pumped up or upset about where it goes. This is Tom King's interpretation, and I'm along for the ride.
Okay. Another book that probably had deaths, because I haven't read it, but you two have, is Extermination. How was Extermination?
It was pretty good. I like how they use the X-Force quite a bit. So I think, is that because the book's coming
up
soon?
Probably. We are getting an X-Force book. Who's writing X-Force? I don't know.
Who is it?
I forgot who.
Is it Rosenberg? God, I'll look that up. Will you guys talk about, since I haven't read on Extermination?
I mean, I was triggered by Extermination. Not, okay. So, like, all right, spoiler warning, skip 20, 30 seconds. Why, not only does Gabby get turned into a hound, right? So she turns into a hound, and then, like, well, I guess I can't spoil it because Andrew said he didn't read it yet. But, like, come on. Like, Gabby gets decked. Something bad happens to Cyclops, and I'm just like, all my favorite characters, right? This is what's got to happen here, you know, because, yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed it, but I was really upset.
Right. Yeah, after you read that, you marched into editor's room and started complaining.
But nobody would say anything to me. It was just a bunch of laughs. So I was genuinely upset.
Yeah, they're doing their jobs. You're showing reaction to it. You don't have to love it. You're giving reactions. That's what they want. It's awesome. I thought it was done well. I'm liking who wrote it. Breeson,
who's writing the new X-Force book.
Yeah, so that makes sense that he's kind of like showing the X-Force and things like that. I think this book's been done well. I enjoy the art. Let's be honest. I'll buy anything with X-Men and like it for the most part. So
yeah, that's awesome. I haven't read it and can't wait to read it. It's one of the books I bought at the shop. Even when I buy them at the shop, that means they rank high, and this one ranks high. Yeah.
Now. A book that I did read that I enjoyed more than Extermination is Spider-Force 1.
Ooh, Spider-Force is good.
Yeah, I'm enjoying that. Man, like when you mentioned to me that you wish that they would have a spider family like that DC has a bat family. Are you pitching that at Marvel yet?
No.
Because I'm all for that, because all these, like, Spider-Geddon books are done so well. Yeah. I think this one was done extremely well, because I like Priest writing. I mean, I like this writing on Deathstroke. I continue to like it on Deathstroke. Uh-huh. And, like, this, like, just the voices of the different Spider family characters has been outstanding.
My favorite part about this whole Spider-Geddon event is that Miles is finally getting out of Peter's shadow. Miles is taking a leadership role. You know, there's a group of spiders following Miles. There's a group of spiders following Otto. And their ideals are completely different. And Miles is not backing down. And I'm like, I love this. Like, this is what I needed from Miles. Because to me, as much as I love Miles, he's kind of like a blank character. He's kind of like he's going to do the right thing. You know, he's always going to go with Peter, you know, but he's never really like expressing himself. You know what I'm saying? It was always something missing to me. For me, I don't know if this is controversial or not, but to me, he was kind of like Black Peter Parker in a way, you know? And now I just want Miles to be Miles' own thing, you know? Yeah, he's still looking for Peter. You know, he's still, you know, he's like, we need Peter for this. And Otto's like, no, we don't. We're going to kill these guys. But I love that, you know, Miles is able to generate that kind of leadership. And that's kind of where the idea for, like, a spider family came. I don't want these guys to disappear after this. Like, I know you can't have a million spiders in this universe, but, you know, have... You know, Miles, MJ, Aranya, a bunch of people, like, you know, constantly in contact with each other at headquarters and just working together as spider people to kind of prevent these kinds of things from happening in the future.
Like, this issue with, who was it, Charlie? I thought that was, like, done well, like, the voice of Charlie in this book. I like, really enjoyed that. I was like, oh, wow, it's quickly becoming one of my favorite spider guys.
Did you catch the part where, because the girl from Old Man Logan is in it, too. That's, she, you know, the one she was calling him, that's saying, I'm your granddaughter.
Grandpa.
Yeah. She is... from Old Man Logan. She's Hawkeye's daughter.
Uh-huh.
Right? She's so she's Hawkeye's daughter, and that took out the Kingpin in the original Old Man Logan book. Remember, she took out the Kingpin. So that's her. And you know, she's like, you're my grandfather, and then Charlie is like, can't be because you're black. You know, like implying that he never messed with a black woman, or, you know, so I was like, damn, Priest is going hard. You know what I'm saying? Like, Yeah. That was really good.
That's
well, and then he scary. Threw some humor in there too. He was like, or like, tan, really tan.
Yep, that sounds like Priest. And you know, Chris, you say that. I've never understood that logic about, like, say, the too many spiders, because I get that a lot from Marvel fans. How can you all have so many Robins and so many Batgirls? And you know what? I don't give a fuck. They're all good characters. Yeah. They're all entertaining. I like reading a Nightwing book, and I like reading a Red Hood book, and I like reading about Damian, and I like reading about Tim and Cass, and I like them. So that's my thing. I don't think there's too many. I don't think there's too many Wolverines either. No. I think a good character is a good character, and I like spiders. I like bat people, and I like Wolverines more than I like Iron Man and Hulks and Caps and all that stuff. That's just me personally. And I right. think there's a lot of people like me, because every time they do events with tons of spiders and tons of bat people, they tend to do well.
Well, you if know? You think about it, like the Spider-Verse is similar to like the Bat Family. Like if DC's really strong Bat Family, people love it and people love the spiders. Like you should capitalize on that, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's instant money. I mean, just think like the video game and then Chris doing the comic zine as well on the video game itself. Like he knows that that's the pitch and that's something that could be interesting to write about. So, I mean, Spider-Man's hot right now.
Yeah. I mean, come on. He's Spider-Man, man. And right. I'm buying all these Spider-Geddon books. I wasn't buying mm-hmm. as much Marvel before. I'm not in on Infinity Wars, but I am in on Spider-Geddon.
Yeah. I buy all the Infinity Wars, but they're all piled up. I read the Spider-Geddon ones, and the X-Men are like the first Marvel books I read right away.
All right. Well, on that note, you can find us on Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify. Find us on Libsyn. We leave our link all over our website. Give us a review. Give us a comment. Give us those 5 stars. Tell us what you like. And interact with us. Send us some questions. You know, we can spend some time. We can answer some questions about anything. Maybe Chris can tell you a little something about Marvel. If he can't, he'll just say he can't. But it doesn't hurt to ask. Ask us what our favorite comics are or what we think you should check out. Yeah, give us a ring. All right.
Well, I'm open to talk about any Hobbit stuff you want to. I'm a straight shooter. Past that, go follow the Nation Nerds. Listen to Nation Nerds. Follow Leo at Leo Marquez something. I don't know. He doesn't even know that Andrew has a Twitter handle, so it doesn't really matter. Go follow Hiram. He's a good dude at Mr. Centron, Mr. Spelled Out. Go follow Rico at, I just threw major shade at Leo right now, but he won't hear it, so it's cool. Go follow Rico at Rico Reads Comics. And on that note,
Fred needs just like Snickers, man.
Just like the streets we call our home. Show some love for the creator. We out.
Oh my god.